For the audience, we do not have Judge Randolph with us this morning, so just wanted to put that out there for you all. We will get started, I hope, in less than 2 minutes. Thank you. Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-5366, Young America's Foundation Appellant versus Robert M. Gates, Secretary, U.S. Department of Defense. Mr. Penley for the appellant, Mr. Whitaker for the appellee.
May it please the court, I'm William Perry Penley on behalf of Young America's Foundation. The Supreme Court and Louisiana Public Service Commission said, an agency literally has no power to act unless and until Congress confers power upon it. A corollary would be when Congress sets the conditions under which an agency may act and those conditions cease to exist, so too does the agency's power to act. Here, the Solomon Amendment restrains not the University of California, Santa Cruz, but the Department of Defense. The statute provides no funds may be provided, unquote. In other words, DOD and the other agencies that provide funds to universities may not do so if the Solomon Amendment is not complied with. Thus, it's not a constraint. UC Santa Cruz has the right to say, the ability to say, no, we don't want recruiters on campus. It's not a civil or criminal violation that results in a decision to prosecute or enforce by instituting proceedings. As a result, the case on which the federal government relies and on which the district judge below relied, Heckler v. Cheney, does not apply. That came out of, sir.
It seems to me that considering Steel Co., that the standing issue is anterior to the Heckler v. Cheney reviewability issue.
Well, standing, I'd be delighted to address standing, Your Honor.
I think without standing, the other issue is
absolutely
material.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I can come back to Cheney, Heckler v. Cheney. I think we do have standing. We meet the Lujan test. The district court found that we did meet the test with regard to, one, the injury that was suffered. We do have an affidavit from a member of the Young Americas Foundation.
The action here is on redressability.
I'll address addressability. Delighted, Your Honor. The question is whether or not if the DOD observed and obeyed the Solomon Amendment, that is, did not provide funds to the University of California, Santa Cruz, because it had a policy or practice that, in effect, prevented recruiters from being on campus, would the withholding of those funds result in a change? And the answer is, under renal physicians, I don't think there's I think there's little doubt that that would happen.
There in your complaint that precludes that suggests little doubt?
Well, we presented argument that, in fact, under similar circumstances, Yale did the very same thing. Yale had a policy or practice against recruiters on campus. Once it was
Yale's a private institution, a major research institution, undoubtedly receives enormous sums of money from the federal
government. $350 million, Your Honor.
What is there in your allegations about the Santa Cruz that suggests that it would not have alternate sources for this relatively small amount it would be losing?
California's broke, Your Honor.
$80 million is only relatively small in Washington, I've realized, and Santa Cruz is quite a bit of money.
It is small. California's broke, Your Honor. They can't pay taxpayers.
What is your complaint about this?
I think the court can take judicial notice of the fact that California is broke, that the all the endowments across
the country. Actually, that doesn't prevent California from spending money.
I think it's quite clear that the university would take the money and run. We simply do not know. I mean, this is what Congress decided.
That's the problem. We don't know, but we need to have a good reason to believe.
We have a good reason to believe because one university which had its funds withheld or risked its funds being withheld, and obviously UC Santa Cruz can't hold a candle to Yale and Harvard, but it is suffering the same economic doldrums of them. Harvard's endowment will lose at least a third of its value over the next several months, as disclosed in Business Week earlier this week.
You used the phrase that the cutoff of funds would produce change. Let's assume that it would produce a change in the activity and the thinking at the University of California at Santa Cruz. Would that actually change the difficulties for people seeking access to military recruiters on the campus?
Absolutely, Your Honor, because right now UC Santa Cruz can have its cake and eat it too. UC Santa Cruz can say, oh, yes, we welcome the military recruiters. Send in your money. Send in your money. On the other hand, however, their policy and practice is to allow students, and the government admits this, the judge below found this, that faculty and students participate in these riots, that they prevent these activities from going forward. If the university took action against faculty members who were frustrating its attempt to permit a lawful activity on campus by firing faculty or expelling students, that activity would come to an end. Just last week, Your Honor, UC Santa Cruz canceled its water polo team. I don't know why. I don't know if it was a Title IX issue. But imagine, if you will, if conservative male students commenced a riot against the participation by women's sports activities on campus to protest the elimination of water polo. In a heartbeat, those activities would be shut down to permit the Title IX compliance to go forward. And that's what we have here. UC Santa Cruz is simply saying, hey, we have the policy, but on the other hand, we have to let the kids do their thing. And these are students at the university, and they are faculty members as well. And if the university, if the Department of Defense obeyed the law and recognized, and the inquiry, as I say, with regard to Heckler, it's not a civil or criminal proceedings that affects an individual liberty or property rights. It's essentially DOD looking itself in the mirror and saying, do we continue to have congressional authority to spend this money? And in fact, what is happening?
I grant you that certain aspects of the opinion in Heckler are inapplicable here. But certainly a very considerable part of the reasoning of Heckler seems to me fully applicable, particularly relating to allocation of resources. I mean, here they, I'm thinking of allocation of what amount to enforcement resources. I know you somewhat resist the term enforcement, but it is a enforcement by cutoff and embarking on the procedure of investigating, determining what actually will work vis-a-vis the University of California at Santa Cruz.
Well, Your Honor,
is likely to be a serious commitment of resources, and it seems to me questionable what a court could do to improve that.
Your Honor, I disagree that it's a serious commitment of resources. I alerted the Department of Defense back in 06 of this violation. and Department of Defense took no action. In fact, we have been advised that military recruiters in the area furthermore advised DOD. DOD's simple response would be to ascertain that, in fact, in 2005, 2006, the University of California, Santa Cruz said to the military recruiters in the face of the riots that were taking place on campus, please leave. It is unsafe for you to be here.
Recruiters, well, that I take it was not, and, was and, not in any way false. It may have been...
As a result of the university's lack of action on it. Now, what we have is really not the type of thing that was in Heckler. What we have here is, and I've looked at every case that was cited in Heckler, the string citation after that, their criminal statutes there with regard to criminal law, a conspiracy and so forth. I've looked at every case that the federal government has cited. Not a single one looks like this. They all relate to civil criminal violations and under which proceedings are instituted to deny property rights or so-called or individual liberty. Here's the problem with expanding Heckler in the way the Department of Defense wants the court to expand it. The Department of Defense says at page 7, the Solomon Amendment leaves it to the discretion of the Secretary whether to invoke the funding cutoff. And then the Secretary says at page 8 and 14, why? Because the students have numerous other avenues to meet with military recruiters besides on-campus job fairs. At page 14, the government says the military services have a center less than 6 miles away from the campus, unquote. That may be the Secretary's view, but it's not Congress's view. Congress's view is that it doesn't matter that they could meet with them on the sly off campus at the VFW hall. Congress wanted them to meet on campus with the recruiters there. Your Honor.
Congress could, of course, have set up a much more rigorous, non-discretionary provision relating to enforcement of the Solomon Amendment. There,
Congress saw no need to do so, Your Honor, simply because Congress said, provided the agency authority that it didn't have before, and said, however, your authority to spend this money, to provide this money, ends when...
After you've made certain determinations.
Right. It said, shall not provide, Your Honor. That's the language of statute. I reserve 15 seconds here on
we'll give you a
rebuttal, if I could. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Henry Whitaker on behalf of the Secretary of Defense. Judge Ginsburg, I do think that the court would have discretion to reach either the non-reviewability or the standing question as a threshold matter under Steele Co. because as this court has held that the bar on reviewability of actions committed to agency discretion is also a jurisdictional ground. And I believe that in footnote 2 of Steele Company and also in the Ruergas case and the Kowalski versus Tessmer case, the court has recognized that where there are a choice between various non-merits threshold grounds, the court can reach any of them if as a threshold matter they're dispositive before it reaches the other one. So,
and which is our case on this?
The D.C. Circuit's case?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure this court has had occasion to apply that doctrine itself. These are all Supreme Court cases, Your Honor.
We've had cases. Yeah. Finding that the Heckler rule is jurisdictional.
Oh, it's the Baltimore Gas and Electric case, Your Honor, and that's in cited in our jurisdictional statement in our brief at page 1. So
the thing that seems odd is that if we were to make law on reviewability under the APA without Article 3 jurisdiction, we would be doing just what Steele Co. enjoins.
Well. As an initial matter, I don't believe this court has to make any law under to hold this non-reviewable. I think that a fairly straightforward application of Heckler.
Well, that it's easy to remember. The court said isn't enough.
I understand that, Your Honor, and what I was going to say, but well, I think what the court has recognized in the Ruergas case and also in the Sinochem case more recently, where the court held that a forum non-convenience threshold question could precede a question of subject matter jurisdiction. I think what the court has interpreted Steele Company to be a bar on reaching the merits of the case as opposed to any other non-merits threshold ground as an initial matter. So, and to be honest, I mean, I think that a very straightforward application of Heckler does show that there's no jurisdiction over this act. There's no statutory jurisdiction under this action. So I think that would be enough to dispose of this case. Unless the court has any further questions about that, I'm happy to turn to the into that jurisdictional question. We do think that a fairly straightforward application of Heckler versus Cheney shows that this is unreviewable. And in the, certainly in the context
of it is the case that certain of the grounds for the courts going the way it did in Heckler are absent here. Isn't that true?
Well, I'm actually not sure it is true, Your Honor.
I mean, there's language in the opinion, as I recall it, talking about using the force of the state to restrain the citizen, that sort of thing. Certainly is quite different from pulling funds off from a state university.
I think that's true, Your Honor. But well, as an initial matter, I thought there was no dispute in this case that the Heckler presumption did govern, and this is the notion that Heckler just sort of categorically doesn't apply is new to me. To
the
this
classification
argument.
Was forfeited, or the issue about classification.
Well,
was forfeited.
I think it was forfeited, yeah. But I do think that Heckler presumption does govern. I mean, the court.
Do you know of any cases extending Heckler to, say, a fund cutoff?
I'm not aware of any, Your Honor. And I mean, in the Freedom Republicans case, we cite that did involve a somewhat similar situation where there's suit against the FEC for failing to cut off funds to the Republican Party, but the court disposed of that case on standing grounds and not reviewability. So no, I'm not aware of any. But I'm not sure why there should be a distinction between those two things, because as you said, the Heckler as you said, I believe in the questioning initially, the Heckler rationale about enforcement resources and about whether to apply.
Part of it is and part of it isn't. Like many Supreme Court opinions, gives lots of different reasons, some of which apply here and some of which don't.
Well, that's true. I think that's right. But certainly, as a general matter, conditions on funds can have regulatory effects no less than simple civil enforcement actions. And I think in many cases, the civil penalties. I'm not aware of what specific. I mean, in the 20 Mile Coal case, for example, this court certainly did apply. In other cases, this court has recognized that Heckler does apply in the purely civil enforcement context. And I think the incentive effect that many conditional grants of funds have would be certainly very similar to the incentives that are created by those kind of civil enforcement.
Aren't you running a bit into your standing argument when you make that argument?
Not exactly, Your Honor, because I guess I was talking as a general matter about funding cutoffs. I mean, that's not to say that there's any evidence or allegation in this case that of what UCSC would do if its funds were cut off or what effect any such action would have on the actions of these protesters, even if it did want to take some action. And I think that absolutely, Mr. Penley did, and I think in their brief conceded that, there has to be little doubt that their action is redressable in this sort of third-party standing context. And those two factors, I think, show that there's grave doubt, not just little doubt, but grave doubt about whether their alleged injury would be redressable in this case.
Is your argument a pleading one or a one about real world activity?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I mean, the government below did not present any extrinsic evidence except for the fact that UCSC does have a stated written policy of allowing equal access to military recruiters, which I think is certainly part of the calculus. This court has recognized in the 12B1 context that a district court can look outside the pleadings, but I think largely the allegations of the complaint are what we're looking at here. That's right. So, but those allegations don't show any necessary causal connection, let alone one that shows little doubt about whether there's redressability in this case. And I'm happy to answer any further questions, but if the court has no further questions, I'll rest on the briefs.
Heckler simply says this: an agency decision not to prosecute or enforce, whether through civil or criminal process, by instituting proceedings that involve the exercise of its coercive powers over liberty or property rights, is a decision generally committed. Institute proceedings. The government has cited to absolutely no case that allows the expansion of Heckler in this unimaginable way, far beyond what the court must have imagined it was doing when it decided that FDA case regarding people on death row. Heckler is limited to these civil and criminal proceedings, never to a situation like this. And in fact, the government cited to no case. The Baltimore gas case, it's an FERC case. It's a gas abandonment case, an abandonment of service case that is handled in those enforcement ways. And so what the government seeks today is an unparalleled expansion of Heckler to go way beyond what the court intended at the Supreme Court, and to involve itself into these areas in which the government can do what it's doing here, simply put on the blinders and say, we know better than the Congress, we get to decide. I address your question, Your Honor.
It is correct, though, that you did not raise in your brief whether as an entire category this was outside the range of Heckler.
Not addressed in the brief, Your Honor, but it's clear on its face. Furthermore, a second prong of Lujan, in Bennett v. Spears, Justice Scalia said, it need not be the very last step in the chain of causation. We have something here where UC said, because DOD did what it did, UC Santa Cruz was able to have its cake and to eat it too as well. What we have here is a grant of authority to spend the people's money. And the grant of authority is conditioned upon a certain requirement. And once that requirement is triggered, DOD has absolutely no authority. It cannot say, well, they could go 6 miles off campus and meet with the kids. No. Congress has already decided that. And once the university does what it did, then DOD has no authority to continue to spend the money. The statute says no funds may be provided. Your Honor, I urge the court not to allow this grand expansion of Heckler to allow the kinds of discretion to these agencies that they want to frustrate the will of Congress and the people. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Penley.